prove. You think your words will make me black and blue, but I think I'm pretty with these old boots on. I think it's funny when I drink too much. Hey, you try and change me, you can go to hell. 'Cause I don't wanna be nobody else. I like the chip I got in my front teeth, and I got bad tattoos you won't believe. So kick out the jams, kick out the soul, pour another glass of that rock and roll. Turn up the band, find the hole, gonna lose control tonight. What do you want from me?
Polly, I can barely see you, Polly. It's so foggy. The fog is so thick. And not just in my brain today, on this Monday, outside. So we do have some, go to our website, to 570news.com, because we do have some cancellations in terms of flights locally that are canceled because of this fog. It's quite bad out there. And that seems to be the kind of chitter chatter in our office this morning, is that drive in and how kind of tumultuous it was with all of that fog happening. And we're going to get to 8 degrees today, but it hasn't burnt off. Mind you, yesterday morning, wasn't that breathtaking? You know, early morning, the frost was still there and the fog was there, but it was bright and sunny and beautiful. And I was sitting in my front window with a coffee, and I was thinking, oh gosh, you know, I should go take some pictures of this. It's so beautiful. And then, you know, typical Sunday morning, somebody is like, I'm hungry, mom. And then the dog probably wanted to go out. And then, you know, all of my dreams of going outside to pretend I was some sort of photographer, whew, gone. Just like that. So careful if you're on your way, to work this morning, 'cause it is pretty thick out there. Okay. Polly, what the hell is the problem in here with the heat? Because I think a lot of people in offices, especially in the winter, are you guys with me? You're listening right now. You know what happens in your office. Somebody wants it hot. Somebody wants it cold. Somebody wants it in the middle. We have like Goldilocks of temperature wanters in the office.
We can put a man on the moon, but we can't have a consistent temperature in an office.
Polly, you took the bitchin' right out of my mouth. How is that possible? Explain that to me. How are we on the radio right now speaking to thousands of people with this amazing technology that's been around for, what, 100 or so years? More than that? My radio schooling is failing me now. Polly,
well,
when was it?
Well, if you count Morse code, you're probably talking the late 1800s.
Thank you, Polly.
But voice, about 100 years.
About 100 years.
105 years.
105. See, Polly knows. He's been to the places where the first radio signal was transmitted. Polly, do you think we could go to the place where the first thermostat in the office was invented and maybe rewrite some history here? You guys, it's like 27 degrees in here. I'm seriously considering, you know, stripping down a little bit because it's ridiculous. And I don't often say this, but I actually feel quite a concern for Mike Farwell's well-being. Because he's going to come in here and he's going to be in here for like 4 hours, right? 3 or 4 hours. And it's going to be, it's sweltering. It's sweltering in here. But you're right, Polly. How is it possible that, like you said, there's been a man on the moon? We can put like pig parts into human bodies and make them fully functional. You know, you need a capillary. Is that right?
A capillary?
Like a vein of some sort. They do that. They take pig parts and use them in human being bodies to, if you need.
Is it a capillary? A capillary?
I don't know, Polly. I'm just saying, if you can transplant parts of animals into human beings, I'm pretty sure you can figure out a friggin' thermostat, people. You know? I just want to complain about it. It's Monday. And I know so many people complain about this in the office, that everybody wants something different. But I don't see any palm trees, margaritas, or a swim-up bar in here. So frankly, 27 degrees, I'm not doing it today.
But I don't understand how one room can be freezing and the next room can be a sauna.
Polly.
Why is that?
They're either doing it to screw with us, or they have no idea how their own systems work, which is actually what I think. They have no idea. Okay, thank you for letting me get that out. Thank you for indulging my crustiness on this Monday morning. I would like to say, on a happier note, usually we go get our Christmas tree. We've been going to get a real tree for the past few years. And usually we go out to see our friends at Groby's, who are amazing. I love Groby's. And usually that's where we head out. But this year, because we were going on Saturday, it was so gorgeous outside, you know, it was sunny, 7 or 8 degrees. We decided to go over to Snyder's Farm. which, you know, historically has been the Halloween farm. We've done lots of stuff there with the radio station, too. And so we decided to go out there, and they have their first Christmas kind of extravaganza happening this year. You guys, it was just magical. It's a donation to get in to One Roof, who, of course, does amazing work here in our community. And so you make a donation, you grab a coffee, and then we got to see Santa. We were playing outside for 2 or 3 hours. There were s'mores. You got to have some s'mores by the campfire. All the animals were out, and it was lovely. And there was... they have three little mini potbelly pigs that I absolutely fell in love with. There will be no Christmas ham at my house this year. It was amazing. So I want to say hi to Brian and his little wee one who came up to say hello to us, to my family, on Saturday. So thank you, Brian, for listening, and thanks for coming along, and thanks to so nice, so kind. I was like, and you know what was embarrassing, Polly, is when Brian came over to introduce himself, I'm pretty sure I was at the goats, and I was like, this is what I was doing, my goat voice. Oh, hi, goat. You should come to my house. Come live in my house, goat. I think that's what I was doing. How he knew it was me, maybe because I do the goat voice. I don't know. Okay, are you the kind of person who would leave a nasty note on someone's car? If you saw that person parking badly, poorly, whatever, would you leave a note on someone's car? We're going to talk about that coming up. Also, after 9:30, our spotlight on women around Waterloo Region continues. And this list made me laugh a lot this morning. One of the most pointless things people brag about. And do you know who's guilty of one of them, Producer Polly? Producer James. James is on the guilty list on this one.
I want to hear this.
Yeah, we're going to do that at 9:45, and we'll see what else you guys come up with. When people kind of do the bragging thing, whether it's online, on Facebook, or in real life, like, you're like, why are you bragging about that? It's a stupid thing to be proud of. So we're going to get to that coming up. Let's start this morning with our continuing coverage here on 570 News of the Elizabeth Wetlaufer case. The nursing home where convicted murderer Elizabeth Wetlaufer worked is set to open its doors today to new patients. The Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care has lifted the order to stop admissions at Crescent Care Woodstock. And to join us and discuss is Jane Midas. She is a lawyer and part of the Advocacy Center for the Elderly. Jane, thanks so much for taking the time this morning. Good morning to you.
Morning, Jennifer.
This is I'm sure, well, like many of these days and all of these days since this kind of sensational case began, I imagine that today is just another in a long line of hard days for the families of Wetlaufer's victims.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a day that's going to be very interesting. Obviously, people are going to start to have bed offers, and they'll slowly start to bring people back into the home. To add to the people who are already there. And I think there's going to be a real concern by people as to, you know, if a bed comes up in this home, do you accept it given these kind of issues that have happened? And I think that, you know, families who have loved ones there, they're going to be really watching, seeing what's happening.
Is this something like the kind of... The not knowing what was happening around them. I mean, but sadly, that's not specific to this nursing home in Woodstock. I mean, we hear a lot of stories frequently about patient care for the elderly and long-term care, and the fact that it's just not where it should be in some cases. Sometimes you hear people rave about the wonderful places that their family members and loved ones are spending their last years. But oftentimes we hear this quite frequently, that there are many, many problems, and a lot of them are deep-rooted and widespread.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of issues in long-term care, and it really depends. It depends on the homes that you're in. It can change between, you know, who's managing the home. For example, this home in Woodstock now has a management company in there that's helping to run the place, which I think is part of the reason that they're starting to open up to admissions. But you have to be really vigilant, and people, I think the important thing is for people to be there all the time. You know, go in and out at different times because you're really the eyes and ears for the residents. So to keep, you know, the homes doing what they need to doing, you really have to watch them, ask questions, and complain if you have issues.
Is that preferable then, from your point of view as a advocate and a lawyer for the elderly? Would it be preferable for, would you like to see management companies, you know, running all of these homes rather than private businesses?
So no. I mean, this is just one of those cases where, in this case, because they were having such issues, mm-hmm. They brought someone in.
Right.
I mean, it's not something. It's just another company. It's just another private company that's running homes. There's lots of different management styles, and that's fine. Really, you know, it's the oversight and making sure that they are complying, and to let people know when they should be complaining and what their rights are in long-term care. So if there's issues going on, that it doesn't get to the point that it was allowed to in this case.
And this is obviously the most extreme case that we've had, here in Canada, that former nurse guilty of killing 7 seniors. As someone, if you are looking for somewhere for your loved one, a parent, or someone in your family, what are we looking for then? Like you say, to go at different times. Are there kind of maybe things that, you know, are red flags or signs that perhaps something is amiss? Are there kind of things that we should be gathering and making a list of?
Sure. Well, there's a couple of different things. Certainly, the very first thing that we say is to make sure that you never put a home on the list of choices that you haven't seen or haven't had someone see on your behalf if you are not able to go, and many seniors, of course, are not able to. Don't rely on, you know, virtual things on the website. Talk to other families. Talk to the residents if you can. Generally, when you're going to pick a home, you are going to be going on a tour. So ask to see places, you know, say if, you know, don't just look at one floor. Ask to see all of the floors in the facility. You know, does it smell? Is it clean? Do there seem to be staff around? What are the residents doing? But, you know, you want to look at those things. But also, I really think that somewhere where people are going to be able to visit, whether it's families or friends, that are going to be able to go in when that person's there and have a look every day just to make sure that they know, are they getting cleaned? Is somebody brushing their teeth? Are they getting their baths? Does a meal seem to be coming on time and to be what's on the menu? That sort of thing.
Yeah, and the food, of course, too, is a place to look, isn't it? We've had some interesting conversations with people who are advocates for for food and nutrition for the elderly. Perhaps if you can join them there for a meal. I remember speaking to someone who said, you know, ask to stay for lunch or stay for dinner, to kind of, you know, get a taste, excuse the pun, for what's being served and kind of the nutritional value. Even the kitchen, can you tour the kitchen if you want to?
You generally cannot tour the kitchen. That would be out of bounds. That would be, you know, that would probably not be appropriate. Some homes certainly do allow people to come in and try the food. I'd say that's more common in the retirement home sector where they're selling
right.
the product.
Yeah.
I think the biggest problem right now in long-term care when it comes to choosing places is that, if you're in a small town, there may be only one choice.
Yeah.
So that's an issue. But also, because there's such lengthy waiting lists everywhere that, you know, people are really scrambling and may not be able to wait for the home of their choice, you know, because they're going to, you know, who wants to sit in a hospital bed or, you know, for 5 years, if that's the waiting list, or you may not be able to stay at home for that length of time. So then you're really looking at other homes that may not be the top of your list. And I think that, you know, these generally tend to be older homes, not necessarily. But you really need to still be there and watching. You know, old homes can give great care, and many of them do. They've been around a long time and, you know, got the kinks out. But you have to just be in there and watching. And if there are issues, you have to take them up immediately with the staff and the ministry if necessary.
Jane Midas is our guest this morning, lawyer from the Advocacy Center for the Elderly. So, Jane, if you are suspect of something, what is the course of action then? Are you first addressing the home itself? Are you, under scarier circumstances, calling the police? Are you getting in contact with someone like you who is a lawyer and an advocate? Or are you doing all three of those things simultaneously?
Well, it really depends, right? There are many avenues that you can do. So if you make a complaint to the home, they have to give you an answer as to how they're going to resolve the issue within 10 days. If you do it in writing, they also have to send that complaint to the ministry. That doesn't mean the ministry does anything.
Mm.
The ministry also has a action line. So you can contact the Ministry of Health action line And make a complaint, and the ministry will come in and inspect. Now, that can take some time, so the people sometimes are a bit unhappy about that because, you know, unfortunately, because of the number of people, it could take months. You can call our office. We assist on some of those. A lot of it is going to be self-help, so we have a lot of information on our website about how to make complaints.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also the patient ombudsman now in Ontario. If it's a process issue, so... they deal with things slightly differently than we do, so it depends on sort of the type of issue. If you feel that the home didn't follow a process, you could complain to them as well. So there's all sorts of things you can do if it's a city home, so if it's owned by the municipality. Your municipality is basically the board of directors. Go to your city councilor. Your city may have an ombudsman. You could go to the city ombudsman. So there's lots of things to do. Often the problem is how do you get it resolved? So just because you see the problem, how do you get it resolved? And we can see that problem in the case of Woodstock where, you know, starting last September, October, they started to really look at these issues. And you got to remember that the issues that they're looking at with respect to the home in Woodstock is they're not related to Ms. Wetlaufer. They're actually related to other kinds of care issues.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, it does sometimes take a really long time to get some of these things resolved because it's often an ingrained problem in the home. And so that's why you really have to deal with it right up front and not to allow it to continue.
As horrible and awful as this entire case has been and tragic, will it eventually or has it already started to improve the experience for people who will be living in homes?
It's hard to say whether it's improved. I think it's done a couple of things. The ministry has recently announced more money and looking at adding money into the long-term care sector, and that would certainly go a long way because a lot of the issues that we run into in long-term care are because the home claims that they don't have enough resources. We're going to get the inquiry coming up in the new year. And that will make recommendations as to how to, you know, deal with some of these issues in long-term care. I think we've definitely got the minister's attention. There's been some changes to legislation that's going back to the House for third reading and hopefully will be passed in the new year, which will allow the ministry to do a lot more so that the moment they can't find, there's certain things they can't do. So hopefully that will change things for the better. It's always very difficult. Because really you're dealing with people and you're trying to change a culture very often in long-term care. And so you're really having to try to change how people do their jobs and to think about things in a different way.
Jane Metis, lawyer and advocate from the Advocacy Center for the Elderly. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime. Thanks. Bye-bye. 9:22, let's take a break. And seriously, I might have less clothes on when this break is over. Right here on 517 News.
Don't look at your phone. Just listen to us.
Monitoring every traffic source for your safest, fastest traffic solutions. Your traffic team is 570 News. Kitchener's breaking news, traffic, and weather station.
All right, we're gonna save. Are you the kind of person who puts notes on cars? Because that was a conversation I had over the weekend. I have a friend who actually keeps Post-it notes in the car. Specifically to call your ass out if you can't park your car or whatever. Anyway, we got to save that because I want to know if people do this. I was like, what? Is that a thing? You have a pen and Post-it notes so you can leave passive-aggressive notes on people's cars. We're going to talk about that coming up. But Polly, look what I just read here. This is on our website too, 570news.com, which has got me thinking. Are we having a Christmas party? Do we have a Christmas party? Maybe we do and I'm not invited. I haven't heard a thing about it.
I think we have something coming up, but I think it's in January, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so will that lessen the booziness? Because normally we have a lunch. Like, we haven't had one of those big, you know, DJ sit-down parties in quite some time.
You know, yeah, like it's not a lunch this year. I know people were kind of annoyed at that the last couple of years.
So it's actually,
it's something in the evening in January, but that's all I know.
I was annoyed. Here's why I was annoyed, Polly. Do you remember this? Do you remember this Christmas lunch thing? Here's why I was annoyed. Because I've been really ranty today. I'm sorry. We went to this restaurant, pretty swanky restaurant for lunch, downtown Kitchener. Pretty swanky. When we got to the restaurant, which was closed for just our staff, just our staff to have lunch. The owner of the restaurant asked us to take our shoes off.
Well, that's nothing new for me. I walk around here without my shoes all the time.
Polly, you can't have your shoes off in a restaurant. This is what I was like, are you kidding me right now? He's like, yeah, we just had the floors done. I'm like, well, are you going to ask the customers to come in for dinner to take their shoes off? A, health code violation. B, no. C, I ain't leaving my Stuart Weitzman boots that I got them on sale, but still, they were expensive. I'm not leaving them in the lobby in downtown Kitchener. Oh my God, I sound like a conservative. So I was like, this is just unheard of. What? That's why I was pissed off at that party last year. And I was pretty vocal about it. Who the hell does that? You own a swanky business. You ask people to take their shoes off in a restaurant. And I'm going to walk to the bathroom to go pee and then come back to the table. Ew. I never went back to that restaurant, Polly. And I won't say it on the air, but I'll tell everybody who listened what restaurant that was, too. Anyway, here's what the National Federation of Independent Businesses this year recommends these steps. No open bar. Because everybody's been so, rapey as of late, you know. It's not a new thing, people. It's not a new thing. No open bar. More food at the company Christmas parties. You need to have more food. Also, no mistletoe. Which, okay, I get that you're trying to, but...
Are you going to be tempted to kiss your coworkers? Is that the idea?
Like, they think that's going to turn people who are, sexual predators into non-sexual. Like, I'm sorry, you either are or you aren't. Doesn't matter if there's mistletoe or an open bar. I mean, look, I can have four whiskeys and there's some mistletoe. I think I'll force myself on someone. That's not how it works. Anyway. Okay, Polly. It's the heat in here. That's why I'm so ranty today on this Monday. We're going to change the tone. We're going to have the spotlight on women around Waterloo Region coming up. Then we're going to talk about what are the most pointless things to brag about. Producer James is one of those braggy braggersons. And can you leave a mean note on someone's car if they can't park said car? That's all on the way after the news at 9:30.
There's never a dull week on Parliament Hill. We've got you covered on the week's events with McLean's on the Hill political podcast. Available online on 570news.com.
Holly, is that new music? Did you get me some new music? I'm going to get you some. Really? I don't feel like I've ever heard that song before in my life. I know I'm sparky today, Polly. But, you know, I think it's, I think we might actually need to consider. Like, does Farwell makes you have, all Rush music, doesn't he?
No, that's just the opening theme. The music is changing in the next couple of months. I'm working on.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, do you need assistance with this undertaking?
Send me a list of songs you want to hear on your show. That was going to send you an email. Now I don't have to.
Oh, excellent. This is going to be fun, Polly. There's going to be some Spice Girls. I'm not going to lie. Do we have to get that approved, or could we just get full? We just do whatever we want.
Just send me the list.
Just do what we want. All right. Well, that's kind of what we do on this show anyway. So far, so good, right? They haven't barged through the door yet and taken the phone away from us. Okay. What are the most pointless things to brag about? We are going to get to that in just a couple minutes. And it's funny because we did this on our sister station on this morning on Country 106.7. And when we were talking about this list, producer James was in that studio. And as we were going through the list, sure enough, his is the number one thing on the list. And even after we told him it's a pointless thing to brag about, he still bragged about it. He wouldn't stop. He's very proud of himself. So we'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. Also, can you leave a note on someone's car? Whether that is, oh, great job parking. It's never that, is it, though? It's never that. Or something worse. I have a friend who admitted over the weekend that he keeps a package of Post-it notes and a pen in his car so he can correct people's parking. Just leave them a little note here and there. I thought that was terrible. Do you do that? Have you done that? Have you been on the receiving end of a car note? Because I haven't. It kind of ruined my day. I'm not going to lie. Jennifer at 570news.com. You can send me those stories or even pictures of those notes if you have them. And that's coming up. We've been doing our spotlight on women around Waterloo Region over the past couple of months since we had our Rogers Women of the Year Awards. And it's been so wonderful. And so many of you in the community have come and said to me that you're really loving these stories. So we'll continue with those stories this morning. And we welcome Women of the Year nominee in the community service category, Faith Morthy, into our studios. Good morning to you.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
Thanks for coming. Now, I was just actually, I should ask you, because you work for young drivers.
I do.
Yes. Would that be something you'd advise against, or are you for or against leaving a post-it note on someone's?
There's been times I've wanted to tuck my business card under a window, right? But I've never actually done it. So as you say, it might ruin someone's day.
Yes.
And so I would just find another spot to park if someone's too close to the line.
Yeah. Like you could, on your business card, Faith, you could just say, like, call me for 10% off or
That's
something.
Right. That's right.
Okay. So why, let's go back and let's tell your story. First of all, I mean, you are involved in many, many causes, but I'm sure it's quite an interesting conversation starter when you're at parties or gatherings. People probably really like to talk about your job at Young Drivers. I'm sure there are lots of opinions on what you do, and because everybody probably thinks they could do your job. Do they think that?
Probably, yes. Although I personally work in driver rehabilitation, so I'm not teaching 16-year-olds to drive. However, my company does. And so it's very, very interesting. So I'm working with people who are maybe recovering from a stroke or a brain injury or returning to driving, or sometimes sadly on the other end, when is it actually time to retire from driving? So we'd be looking at people with dementia, Alzheimer's, that kind of thing. So it's extremely interesting work, and it has my heart when it comes to being able to help people.
Yeah, it is extremely interesting, and something that all of us eventually will go through, I'm sure, with a parent or a loved one or, you know, someone in our neighborhood or someone that we care for dearly, that trying to, you know, gently figure out when it is time for that license to be retired and keep everybody safe.
We like to use the word retirement because it's got a positive connotation to it. And I always say, I hope I live long enough to have to retire from driving, because otherwise it means we died young, right?
You're right.
So hopefully we can live into those years. My car dealer sends me a birthday card every year that says, may you live long enough to scare other drivers.
You're right. It's a privilege denied to so many. So you're right. I mean, to get into those years where, you know, perhaps it's just better for somebody else to be the chauffeur.
For sure.
Not a terrible thing. How did you get into this line of work?
Oh, well, way back. I've done it 33 years,
wow.
34 years. So it's been a long time. I saw an ad in the paper, and I love to teach and I love to drive. And I thought, well, what better than to be a driving instructor? And so started out in the role of a driving instructor, then went on to become a classroom teacher. And then the Young Drivers of Canada franchises in the area came for sale as the previous owner was retiring. And so I took the opportunity to purchase Kitchener and Waterloo, and since then, I've expanded to 9. So
wow.
Yeah.
So you really, I mean, you did start in the cars with the 16-year-olds.
I did, absolutely, with 16-year-olds.
And
yes.
Now, did you have children of your own when you were, did you kind of know that you can't teach the 16-year-old anything?
At that time, my children were just nicely school age. So
yeah.
They
yeah.
were still quite teachable. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tough gig, though, at that, you know, to be, and it's exciting. I remember that moment of getting into a young driver's car. I remember just that elation, you know, it's
yes.
an exciting moment, but it's also got that fear behind it too. So
it does. And teaching 16-year-olds to drive is different than trying to teach 16-year-olds history or math.
True.
You know?
Yeah.
Because I mean,
they want to learn.
They want to learn. That's right. You know, and I mean, some do history and math as well, but you also have a class where you maybe have some who are not so interested, where with driving, we've already got their hearts. And so, they're happy and excited to be able to do it. And when I'm working with those folks at 80 and 85 years old, they can still tell me about their test day, the day they got their license. So it is an important part of someone's life.
I was just thinking about that you are forever remembered. I mean, we all remember our driving instructor.
Yes.
We all remember their name. We all remember some of the things they taught us as
yes.
we were learning to drive. So you're really embedded in a lot of folks' minds and hearts, aren't you?
That's right.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So why Kitchener-Waterloo? Is this where you're from? Why
yes,
did you
I grew up here.
You grew up
I grew
here.
Up here. Yeah,
yeah,
I was born in Kitchener, and I grew up here in the city. Spent my high school years just outside of the city in the town of Petersburg, and went to Waterloo Oxford High School. So this is home for me.
you are busy in business, but then you are busy in leadership and motivation and inspiration too. I mean, we can go through a few of your causes here. I don't know that we'll get to every single one of them. Ray of Hope, the Waterloo Region Food Bank, Syrian Refugees, Waterloo Mennonite Brethren Church. You certainly have your hands and passions in a lot of things.
I do, and I, you know, this is the season where we often say it's better to give than to receive, and I just find that through the giving, I'm so blessed, and it just, it inspires me, and it energizes me, and, you know, if I had a choice on a Sunday afternoon yesterday, I was at Ray of Hope, you know, if my choice is to sit home and watch a movie or watch something on TV or be down cooking and, you know, with a group of people serving those who are sometimes less fortunate than us, I would by far be the one who'd be in the kitchen cooking.
Wow. What are your favorite recipes then? Because you're cooking for crowds quite frequently.
Oh, we are. Normally, at Ray of Hope, we are around 200, 250. It varies a little bit. So, yeah, so it's a big crowd. Well, yesterday it was turkey pot pie and spring leaf salad. And
yum.
Yeah, we try to do, we really, our goal is to do something very nutritious as well so that, you know, people can not only benefit from just, you know, having a full tummy, but the nutrition and then, of course, the sense of community of people being able to gather and share and just live life with one another.
Do you ever find yourself, you know, torn between these community organizations and passions? Do you have to organize yourself? What if our friends at the food bank want you on the same day as Ray of Hope wants you? What do you do?
Sometimes I do, but I do try to keep it very well organized. I mean, when you do as many things as I do, you do have to have some structure to it. So I have my days when I, you know, I'm at Ray of Hope, you know, the first Sunday of every other month, and then the second Tuesday of the months in between, and I do the regional food bank on Thursday mornings, and I have a soup ministry that I lead on Friday mornings where we employ some people from the community who may not be ready for a part-time job somewhere else yet. But would certainly benefit from not only the skills, the money, but the mentoring, and so we make fresh soup on Friday mornings, and then WMB sells it in their cafe on Sunday mornings. So that's been a real initiative that's been very exciting for us. So I try to keep them well scheduled, but I'm telling you, I can haul more food in my Mazda 3 than you can believe.
No drive-thrus for this. You know, Faith, I'm thinking about as I'm listening to your stories and your passions. I grew up with a girl who was born on Christmas Day, and her name was Holly Angel. That was her name.
Wow.
And Angel, of course, was her last name. So, I mean, they didn't know, but I feel like your parents giving you the name Faith, your faith seems to guide you in so many beautiful places. And it's interesting to me that someone, you know, it's a nature nurture kind of thing, you know, with the name Faith is so faithful and so present for her community and her church.
Yeah, my parents were Christians. I have a sister named Hope.
Is that right?
Yes. And so they taught me growing up. They had a heart for service for the community as well. And so I learned it, you know, on their laps and throughout their years. And, you know, they were fortunate enough to be able to retire very early and in their life and spent the last 20 years of their lives just giving to the community in a wholehearted way. So it was an example that was set for me and a passion that was developed very young. I think also grew up in a home where no one was more important. Every person was valued, and it did not matter, you know, what color your skin, what religion you practiced, how much money you made in our home. That all became equal when it came to our dinner table and our home. And so I've tried to carry that through in what I've done for the community.
There's a beautiful kind of picture. I've seen one of those kind of inspirational things that says, you know, don't build a fence, you build a bigger table.
Yes.
And that seems like kind of something that resonates with you too, you know, that you always kind of, you know, break down walls and make sure that there's a spot at that table for everyone, including, of course, when we talk about Syrian refugees, which I know was a polarizing issue for many people and still is. And I think sometimes we can find the best examples from people who are heavily involved with their faith when it comes to that, to opening hearts and arms and minds to people from different faiths. And we saw so much leadership in the community from religious organizations when it came to helping the people in our community who were coming to us from Syria.
Yes, and I started with a driving lesson. Somebody phoned me and said, you know, there's a person in my building, a gentleman who's from Syria and needs to learn to drive. And there was the table piece. The moment I did a driving lesson, I was invited to their table.
Wow.
And their hospitality was just amazing. And there were, I think, six families in that building. And one by one, I was able to teach all the men to drive. And now what's so exciting is I'm teaching all the women to drive.
Ah.
And it's just exciting. And it's exciting for them. And it's exciting for all of us.
That is exciting.
To see them just, you know, I mean, driving is Canadian.
Yeah. And was, is that something women weren't allowed to do in Syria?
In Syria, apparently in the larger cities, some women did drive, but out in the smaller towns, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them would have spent some time in Saudi where they were not allowed to drive until actually just recently it opened up. So it maybe, even though it wasn't against the law, it probably just wasn't as common as women driving here.
Yeah. Talk about your nomination. Do you know who nominated you? Is it because it come to light since the awards night?
It actually has. It was Harry White, who is the CEO at the Ray of Hope, who nominated me. I know Harry as well through Waterloo Mennonite Brethren Church. We're a church, so he, although he sees what I do at Ray of Hope, he knew that I was, you know, involved on a much broader scale than just the Ray of Hope in the city. So he put my name forward.
That was a great night, wasn't it?
It was a wonderful night.
Yeah. Watching all of those women in such great places, you know, come forward and accept those awards and accept those nominations, and just the energy to be surrounded in a room of women who lead and are mentors. I mean, it was so palpable. I love that night.
Yes, it's wonderful. It was wonderful, and it is wonderful. And we're in a community. It's great to be in a community that embraces women's leadership. You know, and even I'm in a business. Young Drivers has many, many women leaders in our organization, which is great too. Because some organizations, as they get larger, you tend to see a lot of men at the table. And I'm a regional director with Young Drivers, and even there, we are more women than men.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. And now, tell me this. Do you, the theme I have found as I spoke and as I continue to speak from with the women who have been nominated for Rogers Women of the Year is that importance of mentorship and being and finding someone, especially if you're a woman, to find another woman who can kind of help you and guide you through business and life and all of it tied together. We know as women, it's kind of, you know, we can have full careers, but we still have that emotional burden of all of the things at home and all of the passions we take on. Was mentoring a thing that kind of led the way for you, or are you interested in mentoring people now?
Yeah. So I definitely had a mentor as a younger woman, unfortunately. You know, one was my mom, for sure, you know, who's passed away. And then more recently, one of the members of our congregation who was a real mentor to me, just moved to the West Coast to live with her daughter. And, but yes, I have had other women mentors for sure in my life, and men, you know, who have spoken into my life in big ways. And yes, it is something I pass on. It's something I value. Raising up other leaders is a huge part of what I want to be able to do, to be able to, I'm a fair visionary, so I can dream about things that I'd like to have happen, but I'm quite willing to get them up and running and then mentor someone else into the role.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. There you have it, people listening right now. Faith is, if she can squeeze you in between, you know, Ray of Hope and the Food Bank and the Waterloo Mennonite Brethren Church, perhaps you'd be lucky enough to have her as your mentor. Faith Morphy, congratulations on that nomination, and thank you so much for your service to this community. I mean, goodness gracious, is it a joy to be here because of people like you?
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back. This is the Monday edition of the Jennifer Kimball Show on 570 News.
Your home for the Toronto Maple Leafs is 570 News.
Okay, so I was having a conversation with a friend over the weekend. And we were, I probably shouldn't say this out loud, but what the hell? I have a weird thing. Maybe it's because I'm entitled. Maybe it's because I'm greedy. It drives me cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs when I look out my window and someone who's visiting one of my neighbors parks in front of my house. Why? Why does that make me cuckoo? I don't know. It's not my street. I don't know why it makes me. And here's the only thing. If the street is full of parked cars, by all means, please park in front of my house. As a matter of fact, if you need a spot, I'll give you my driveway. Honestly, I feel like I try to be, you know, a giving person. But if I know the car who's parked in front of my house, it has gone somewhere else on the street, I'm like, why do you got to park in front of my house? Why?
Yeah, I find that annoying too. If someone who I don't know is parked in front of, if it's one of my neighbors, fine.
Sure.
I know, but yeah, it bugs me when the spot in front of my house is, it's not my spot.
I know.
I have no claim to it, but it bugs me too. I don't know why.
I don't know. And then I felt like I had to examine why I was such a jerk about it. And not that I'm a jerk. I mean, I don't go out and say anything and I just don't understand. Like any normal functioning human being, I think when you drive, you're like, oh, I'm going to Polly's house. Oh, look. There's a spot in front of Polly's house. Since I'm going to visit Polly, I'll park in front of Polly's house. That's how I think normal people think, right? So if the whole street's open, and you're going to Polly's, but you park in front of Jennifer's, I don't understand it. I just don't get it. It drives me nuts. So I was having this conversation with one of my friends who keeps a pad of Post-it notes in his car to leave notes on the windshields of people that he thinks have parked like jerks. He's like, do you want to post it? I'm like, no, I don't. I know I'm not entitled to think this way. I'm just expressing my weird kind of thing. So I wouldn't. But he says if he sees someone like in a parking lot take up the two spaces or park incredibly crooked or park way too close to another car, he will leave the note. He will get the Post-it note and leave the note on the car. I was like, you are bold, you know, like you're not by law, but he has no problem doing it. Star 570, 519-570, 2545. Have you ever got the note on your car? Cause I got one and it hurt my little snowflake heart. I'm not going to lie. It hurt my heart a little bit. And I'll tell you about that one in a second. Al, hey, good morning, Al. How are you?
Yeah, good. I'll tell you one time I seen this guy park and fancy car. Yes, nobody's was better than his. And I seen him park, and I was so ticked to the way he parked over the line. Like, I don't want anybody near my vehicle. I went into the dollar store. I got a coloring book and some crayons. I put them inside the book, and I left him a note. I said, buddy, maybe you can practice staying in between the lines, and maybe you'll be able to park better.
Oh, Al, that's a good one. That's a good one. And you know, at least you gave him a little present.
Yes.
You know, thanks for the call, Al. Thank you for the call. Star 570. Hi, Paul. Good morning. Thanks for calling us.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Not bad. This whole thing about the way cars are parked in parking lots, you pull in, you see somebody who's parked erratically, and you think the guy's a jerk. Well, you know, when he pulled in, there was a car sitting there next to him that was double parked, so he had to park one over in order to fit in there.
Good point.
It's not always the person that's parking that you're seeing there. It could have been somebody else. Somebody else may have been way back in a parking space and, you know, like a lot where it's doubled up.
Good point,
now
Paul.
He's got to park further back as well.
You
can't always blame that person.
Gotcha. I agree with that. Yeah, that's a good call by Paul. So one time I got this note in this parking lot. It was snowy. It was a condo parking lot. It wasn't my condo. I was visiting someone, and I get this note. So it's snowy. Listen to me. I'm trying to defend myself already, aren't I? And so I couldn't really see the lines. There's only one other car, and the visitor is parking, and I couldn't really see where exactly the parking spots were. A good thinking person, a smart person, probably would have taken the exact first one beside the curb, right? So that you can line up the cars beside. Well, that's not what I did. I just parked. I came out to the nastiest note, Polly. It called me a lot of names. Like, I obsessed about it for the longest. It called me all kinds of names. I was very upset about it. So I swore I'd never do that. I would never, even no matter how mad I was, I would never leave a note on someone else's car. Never. Why is it always a BMW, though? You know what I'm saying? Why? You know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying. Okay, listen, we got to save the things that the most pointless things people brag about. We're going to save that till tomorrow. So, Polly, you think of one. You think of one, and we'll expose producer James because he's number one on the list of things you should not brag about. We're going to talk about that tomorrow. As always, it flies by with you guys. I just so appreciate your time and your input and your listening. Thank you for that, and we'll see you tomorrow.